But she could feel the gentle jostling of the ship as the drive hummed deep in the replicade's bowels. Yeah, I'm getting engine data and flight controls now. Everyone, hold on to something, he ordered. Anki looked at the other men as Brendel took control of their ship. The replicade shifted, tossing everyone into a dizzy dance as they tried to maintain their balance. It was a rough ride. It would make for a rougher crash, Anki thought, and this time she wouldn't be cushioned in crash gel. There was a 45-degree pitch sending everyone forward. Anki slid on her legs and caught a console with her shoulder, half knocking the breath out of her. It hurt, but she shoved the pain aside. From her new vantage point, she could see the screen Brendel was using to fly the ship. He was fighting to maintain altitude, but she knew, based on the terrain, he was trying to stay low enough to avoid detection. She wondered how many times he might have tried these evasive maneuvers. It occurred to her that he might never have. Usually ships fled the Greshans. She had never heard of a Greshan fleeing from another fleet of ships. Brendel swore as the replicade rolled hard left. For a second or two, gravity lost control of their bodies. The force of it took control again as they slammed hard to the deck. If the Greshans don't kill us, then all the jostling this ship is doing might. Have you ever flown a ship? She asked, not realizing she was yelling at him. Brendel turned to face her, his face a paler white than it had been moments ago. His eyes were piercing, but gentle. I'm not really a pilot, he said. There should have been a shrug that followed, something that said he was kidding, perhaps, but instead there was the sound of an explosion shaking through the hull of the ship. It crossed her mind that it didn't much matter if he was a pilot or not. Things weren't going in a very favorable direction for anyone on board. Anki swallowed down fear and steadied herself against the ship's console as another turbulent roll shook the deck beneath her. A klaxon sounded, and for the second time in a single day, Anki knew she would die. Chapter 22. Brendel. Feeling like you were about to die did two things. First, it made you appreciate each breath that separated you from the last. Second, it made you want to fight harder to extend those breaths. For Brendel, the only thing he could do was think fast and pray to the gods he could pull something from his sleeve to keep from dying. Thinking was easier said than done with the distraction of the crew screaming for their lives behind him. Was the turbulence scary? Of course, but maneuvering the replicade wasn't something he was familiar with, and he needed maximum concentration to help her aloft. There were too many peaks protruding from the moon's surface that threatened to tear the hull of the ship from its frame, never mind the fact that targeting lasers were painting the replicade red. Brendel drove the pitch downward, saying a silent prayer that the ship would not scrape against the rocky terrain and rip them apart. The downward plunge caused gravity to fall away for a moment. If not for the console, Brendel might have floated away from the controls. Unable to bring the ship back under control, elevating lift, promoting another few precious seconds of life for him and the ragtag crew screaming behind him. A cliff appeared on the screen ahead of the ship. He reversed the maneuver, veering skyward, shoving gravity back towards the deck. He heard the sounds of bodies striking steel, the shouts of anger or fear in the background. He couldn't tell which because it all sounded the same through the filter of his beating heart in his eardrums. He heard his name, but it was a distraction. He ignored it, shoving it away as his eyes focused on the screen. The controls. The imminent death behind them. The replicade shuddered under them, quaking and jostling through the thin atmosphere of a useless planetary body. His hands fumbled at the screen, reacting to stimulus as it appeared. He didn't question anything, just reacted. He was in his own world, shunning the despair emitted from the voices behind him. A hand grabbed his shoulder and spun him around. "You're killing us!" Malekia screamed. There was blood on his face and hands as the gray-skinned man pointed in Brendel's face. Brendel didn't have time for this, so he turned back around. The hand gripped his shoulder again, forcing the only response Brendel could muster from the stimulus. As his body turned, the hand reached for the throat of his assailant. Pale fingers gripped tightly and lifted the man from the deck. Feet dangled as a mouth gasped for air. Brendel had no intention of killing him, but he had to do whatever it took to save the ship. The idea of one man dying to preserve the group came into his mind. Disgusted, he shook the thought away and shoved the man towards the bulkhead, turning to face the screen again. He knew if Malekia was smart, he would give Brendel space to work. Malekia's reaction was anything but smart. He charged Brendel, driving his shoulder into Brendel's stomach, knocking the wind out of him. Everything began to fade for a moment as Brendel gasped for air. A fist was driven into his face before he even realized he was on his back. Everything was tinged in shades of bluish black as the taste of iron was on his tongue. Another strike on his face caused his head to bounce off the deck, the cold thud of his skull hitting a surface with no intention of being merciful. Brendel had to do something, control the ship as it launched skyward, exposed and burning hard. There was only one thing he could think to do to control the situation. He drew his weapon and drove it under the chin of his assailant. Malekia stepped back, his feet on the side of a console as the replicade flew upward. The man had the cold gaze of a killer in his eyes. But there was a hurt hidden beneath his yellow irises. "What do you think you're doing?" Brendel snapped, half turning his head to look at the controls and try to settle the ship into a maneuver so that gravity wouldn't crush them to death. "I'm trying to evade the enemy and you attacked me!" Malekia held no apology in his eyes. "You're killing us!" he spat. Brendel scoffed and pointed at the screen. "No, you see that vessel on the screen behind us? It's painting a target on our back and is about to launch a full-scale attack right up our collective asses if I don't get us the hell out of here! They are the ones trying to kill us!" Malekia went to step forward, but Brendel stopped him with his gun, leveling it at the man's face.
"Do it. Shoot me, Kilawa," he said.
The force of his words carried contempt meant for something else, but was directed right at Brendel.
"What? I don't want to shoot you,"
he said, manipulating the controls so the push of gravity settled in a way that at least made it easier to breathe.
"What is Kilawa?"
Both men stared at each other in silence. Anki stepped forward, her hands up.
"Kilawa is the Leakin word for demon," she said. "It was a harbinger of death in their religion."
Malekia said nothing. It was affirmation enough.
"I'm not a demon," Brendel said, "and I have no intentions to kill anyone on this ship. Now if you'll please leave me to piloting this trash can, then maybe I can save us all. Anki," he said as he tossed his weapon towards her.
She caught it in mid-flight.
"It was risky letting someone who might shoot me in the back have my weapon, but she had to know it's suicide to kill me now," he thought. "Please make sure I don't get any more surprise attacks."
He turned his back on them and focused on the controls as he programmed a series of evasive maneuvers, praying silently it wouldn't come down to autonomous evasive techniques. With no one strapped in, he knew the risk was high of killing someone. Anki held the gun in her hand, casually letting it rest against her thigh, refusing to point it towards Malekia.
"Dace is hurt."
Malekia finally said after a long silence. The tone was more reverent and less hateful. Brendel and Donkey looked towards the aft of the bridge and saw Dace lying unconscious.
"Is he breathing?" Brendel asked.
"No thanks to you,"
Malekia said coldly. There was an entire argument looking for a reason to escape Brendel's lips, but he choked it down.
"Onki, can you please check on Dace? It might be a good idea to strap everyone in, because this ride isn't going to get any easier."
Onki moved behind him as he moved his fingers over the control screen. Even with the transponder off, the Telran was still able to detect the replicate. Brendel rubbed at the back of his head where it had struck the deck. He felt the early formations of a bump, the sensitivity of it increasing the more he touched it.
"I need to get us out of this sector," he said to no one in particular.
"How?" Anki asked as she knelt next to Dace. Malekia was next to her, holding his hand.
"There is a gateway, unmarked, not too far from here. If we burn hard for it, we can escape."
"Can't they just follow us?" Anki asked. She was fastening straps around Dace's unconscious body now.
"Well, here's the thing. I know the gateway is there, but it is invisible to the Telran because I hid it in case I needed to use it as an escape route. My original plan was to sneak off the ship in a transport pod, but that didn't work out. Now I have a ship that's the right size and mass to make it through, provided we can hit it right, and the Telran won't be able to follow us without causing their ship to implode," he said.
"You seem pretty sure about that, but this ship is probably double the size of any transport I've ever seen," Anki said, not in a sarcastic way, but one that still had the lingering sentiment of a question. Brendel turned and smiled.
"Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure if we can't run away, then we'll be dead either way."
He turned back to the control screen and veered the replicate in the direction that led to Key Lorna, the hidden gateway he erased from the records of the Telran several months prior. He had been lonely and depressed at the time. The idea of escaping the snares of the Greshan Navy had been appealing, but he knew he would never be able to return home if he carried through with the plan. Key Lorna, as he called it, was one of the smaller gateways in the sector, typically called a service station. It was designed to transport small ships for repair jobs in other sectors. Back when the idea of bridging the Ilorian galaxy's vast worlds together seemed like a noble idea. My, how those progressive ideals seemed to backfire in a gloriously unfortunate way. He might not have ever pulled the trigger on escaping, but his idea to flee had not faded in all that time. If the replicate could survive the jump, then they might be able to see tomorrow.
Maybe it was a happy accident, he thought.
It was almost as if fate had seen this moment coming. Chapter 23. Anki. Plans were fluid. It was what the Luthien Navy taught its sailors and marines in training. If you thought your plan was solid, then you were wrong. Case in point, everything that was happening since the Ceratora's klaxons sounded. She thought she was safe, but she was wrong. She thought she could fight the enemy who had taken control of her ship, but she was wrong. She thought she could flee, but her transport was intercepted. It may or may not have saved her life, but the fact remained that her plan had failed. She saw an armed Greshan and her training took over. She shot at him using all of her skill and resources, but in the end she failed to carry out her mission. The fight ended in her surrender, one she knew was dishonorable to her people. She had been thrust into war to die for Luthia, not to concede to the enemy. Yet here she was, fighting to survive with aggression at the helm of a ship she found herself on. to fathom the idea that both he and she were alive on the same ship wormed its way through her mind in the most annoying sense imaginable. When Brendel used her crashed transport to hail for assistance, she thought he was insane. She knew they were destined to die on that moon. The burning remains of the Ceratora keeping them company until they breathed their last breath. His plan had the beginnings of a well-executed rescue mission. A ship landed, yes, but now they were in more danger than they had been initially. Now, as she knelt next to Malekia, as he held on to his husband for dear life, she saw the next phase of their would-be captain coming into play. Brendel wanted to take a barely functioning warship through a small service station in hopes of transporting to another sector. The replicade was at least twice the size and mass of the repair transports which she used to frequent the service stations. His idea bordered on suicide, she thought. The worst thing was that she couldn't think of a better plan that might save them. So here she was, riding a ship piloted by a man who served her enemy, and wishing him the best of luck in her heart because her lips couldn't stand the taste of those words. Plans were fluid indeed.
"Are they still following us?" Malekia asked her.
She had no idea, but she understood that he didn't feel comfortable asking Brendel. The reminder of their argument still sat chilling in her fingers. She looked at Brendel's gun and wondered if he knew how easy it would be for her to pull the trigger. She wondered why she didn't, but quickly pushed past the thought and back to the question at hand.
"Brendel, is the Tel'ran still chasing us?" Anki asked.
Malekia leaned forward next to her, his arm nudging against hers. Without turning around, he said,
"Yeah, more or less. It's hard for them to get a lock with all these mountains, but I can't keep these kind of maneuvers up for long. This ship wasn't designed for evading, and I'm more than a little worried we might rip the wings off if we're not careful."
Sweat was beading on his forehead and upper lip. The moisture reflected the lights from the console and made his face seem to shine from the glow. She noted how he kept saying "we." It was at least a little comforting, knowing she wasn't completely alone. Even if her companions were an old Leakin couple who practiced a dead religion and, for lack of a better term, aggression fugitive.
"What do you propose?"
She silently hoped he had a plan, but hope was an expensive commodity, and the price wasn't one she wanted to pay with regret. Brendel shook his head, almost as if he was arguing with himself.
"If we can build up enough speed, then I think we should shoot straight up out of the atmosphere, burn hard past the debris field of your ship, and hope there's enough distortion where they can't track us."
It was cold how he referred to the debris field of her ship. Anki wiped away a fledgling tear from her eye and swallowed down her emotions. Now wasn't the time. The Ceratora was lost, and there was no changing that. But if he could save them, that was enough. She could grieve the Sera later.
"Isn't that dangerous?" Malekia asked.
Brendel turned to look at the man.
"Very. But it's more dangerous for them. The Tel'ran is too heavy to follow us in a straight line. If nothing else, it could buy us a little time. What do you say? It's your ship, technically."
Anki thought she could see a smile forming on Brendel's lips, but it might have been the way the lighting hit his face. Malekia looked at her, the signs of worry etched hard on his pale gray face.
"What do you think, Anki?"
he asked, his yellow eyes wide, eager for her to tell him what was right. With every fiber of her being, she couldn't understand why the question was coming back to her. It struck her that Malekia might trust her more than he trusted Brendel. But that didn't make her an expert in piloting a ship. The only thing she knew at the moment was that she didn't want to die. Whatever helped her achieve that goal was all right by her.
It's your ship, but I think Brendel has a good plan for getting us out of here alive, Anki said.
The words, good plan, echoed in her mind for a moment, questioning her sanity. All eyes were on her. Did she make the right choice in trusting Brendel? She could only hope so. If it was any consolation, at least they weren't dead yet. That was her buy-in for following his lead? At least we aren't dead yet? It sounded ridiculous when she thought about it, but she couldn't find the strength to take it back.
Do what you need to do, Malekia said.
He nodded at Brendel. She took it as a symbol of understanding shared between the two of them. Anki had no idea where that understanding would go if they made it through the gateway, but for now, all she could think of was getting to that point.
All right, hold on, everybody,
Brendel said as he braced himself next to the console. Gravity increased exponentially over the course of several seconds. Anki could feel the blood draining from her face, and everything was becoming a blurry version of the world. She heard the groans of a masculine voice behind her, or beside her. She couldn't conceive direction anymore. All she knew was that flying hurt. A lot. She began to pass out, the world coming to life in intermittent bursts of blurred blues. The pressures were extreme to the point she couldn't even turn her head.
Why did I agree to support Brendel? This is what I get for trusting the enemy,
she thought between moments of her world going black. Chapter 24 Brendel. The mind is a powerful thing. It didn't matter that there was no such thing as turbulence in the dark, or that the rumble of the engine had faded once they broke orbit. For Brendel, the replicate was shaking under his control, fighting for elevation as it seared through the debris field of what was left of the Ceratora. It had been the ship Anki was on, and now it was gone, depleted of life and fizzling out as the radiated portions of the debris cooled in the vacuum. He had seen the ship go Nova, but now that he knew a survivor, the spectacle of it had waned. The only interest it held for him now was not in the relative beauty in the way it burned, but all the ways it could damage the replicate and cause them to meet the same demise. His hands were sweaty, and he was getting nervous that his grip on the console might slip as he maneuvered the ship, zigzagging between larger portions of the Ceratora's remains. He was aided by the large monitors on the ship, alerting him of the hazards as the replicate reached out, burning through the dark being its only escape plan. But the execution was all up to him. It occurred to him, after a time, that he didn't hear anyone speaking anymore. Even the light conversation of the two people whispering was silenced. He dared a look behind him and saw the bodies of Anki, Dace, and Malekia, unconscious on the deck. Worried, he fumbled through a secondary console and scrolled his fingers through the screen.
Come on, where are you?
He said out loud, but no one was listening. Several pages of data went past and he glanced from console to console, monitoring the trajectory of the ship while also searching for the autopilot program. He found the file, but it was text only.
Shit,
he said, opening the file with a keyboard application projected in front of him. As luck would have it, the file actually had a speech function. He selected it.
Ship, I have three personnel unconscious on the bridge. I need a health diagnostics. Execute.
He snapped, his hands falling back to the console to avoid what looked like a burning transport. The projected display blinked obnoxiously,
but he could tell it was the ship's artificial intelligence waiting to respond. The text followed soon after. Replicate AI detects 3 personnel casualties in varying states of criticality. 1 female, unconscious with light breathing, non-threatening situation. Cause of casualty was drop in blood pressure. Heart rate and blood pressure are normalizing. 1 male, unconscious with light breathing, non-threatening situation. Cause of casualty was drop in blood pressure. Heart rate and blood pressure are normalizing. 1 male, unconscious, with staggered breathing. Criticality to life is fluctuating. Cause of casualty was blunt trauma to the head, causing swelling in the brain. Heart rate and blood pressure waning. Recommended expedient transfer of personnel to Medical Bay for Class 3 first aid. Would you like for Replicate AI to assist? The screen was full of all kinds of useful information. The first 2 casualties were negligible, but the 3rd casualty could mean loss of life if Brendel didn't do something quick. Ship, I kind of have my hands full right now. Is there a way you can wake up one of the others and have them take Dace down to the medical bay? The icon blinked again, but the response was faster this time. Replicate AI is unable to function as you desire. The interface between Replicate AI and manual control of the ship's interior have been offline since the drive's initiation prior to flight.
Figures.
Brendel said. All the rush in bypassing the safety protocols meant Anki probably ripped out the interface when she yanked out the wiring in the bulkhead. Half the wires were still jutting out like hairs on a wild animal.
Ship, can you take control of the ship's flight control systems and get us through the debris field?
Replicate AI does have access to exterior flight surfaces and engine thrust control capabilities. This does not afford the piloting software the ability to perform maneuvers beyond collision prevention and sustained flight path. Is this suitable? Brendel read the message and stifled a laugh.
Yes, ship, that is suitable for now. Please, take control and maintain the present heading.
There is a flight path available with lower risk of collision. Do you wish to change your course? A new flight path appeared on the screen, banking the Replicate hard left, reducing speed, and allowing the Telran to be in range for a lock.
Not no, but hell no, Brendel thought. Negative, ship. Maintain present course. No deviations from set heading.
Acknowledged, the screen read. Brendel wondered if it would have sounded sarcastic if the interface allowed him to have speech and audio. It was a thought he shook out of his head as he ran over to Anki and Malekia. If he could get one of them awake, then they could help with Dace. Brendel stopped at Anki first, shaking her by the shoulder.
"Anki, wake up,"
he said until she finally stirred. She looked groggy, but that was to be expected, he thought as he moved over to Malekia. Anki sat up and rubbed her forehead while Brendel stirred Malekia awake. Lucky for Brendel, the other man was more alert after Brendel touched him.
How long was I out?
Anki asked. But her question went unanswered as Malekia sat up.
I need your help getting Dace to the medical bay, Brendel ordered.
Both Anki and Malekia looked over at Dace. The shallow rise and fall of his chest wasn't a good sign.
I'll grab his arms and you take his feet.
Malekia wasted no time climbing to his feet to help, stepping over his husband and kneeling down to grab his ankles.
I'm ready, Malekia said.
Brendel nodded as he reached for Dace's wrists.
Anki, I need you to make sure there's nothing between us and the medbay.
She was already standing.
Got it,
she replied as she jogged hurriedly off the bridge and down a passageway. The ship was only 3 decks,
with the bridge on the top deck and the crew cabins on the second deck, along with the medical bay and galley. The lower third deck was reserved for the engineering spaces and machine shops. The aft portion of the ship was for cargo and could be accessed from the first and third decks. The fact that most ships were designed relatively the same was a good thing, Brandel thought. The bad thing was that getting a full-grown man down a ladder well without a stretcher was difficult. He wished he had sent Anki for a stretcher first, but in the name of expedience neglected to do so. Whatever damage had been done, it was too late now. Brendel grabbed the nearest console while Anki and Malekia strapped Dace to the table turned on the med cart. Accessing the same interface as the bridge, Brendel spoke.
Ship, I need you to run a secondary diagnostic on Dace. He is now in the med bay.
The crew of three looked down at Dace as the med cart scanned him. Red and green lights shone up and down his body as it read all of his stats. Brendel watched the readout for what the ship might find. It came sooner rather than later. Replicate AI is initiating Class 3 first aid. There were no changes in status from moving the casualty, though next time a stretcher is recommended for moving a casualty with a head injury. Brendel shook his head. He was relieved that Dace was getting treatment, but if there was further damage, it would have been his fault.
No wonder Malekia thought I was trying to kill them. Are we out of harm's way?
Anki asked, stepping closer to Brendel while Malekia held Dace's hand, whispering something in his ears, probably encouragement or a prayer, Brendel thought.
I have the ship's AI flying us out of the debris field, but the interfaces are damaged from bypassing the protocols when we initiated the drive sequence, so being out of harm's way is a relative thing. I do think we are out of range for the Telran to get a lock on us, especially with all the debris from the Ceratora.
She stared at him, a look of hurt in her eyes, but she didn't say anything.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean it to sound like that, he said.
She just shrugged and stepped back toward Dace and Malekia. Brendel stood there, biting his tongue and wishing he had put some thought behind his words before he brought up the Ceratora. It was too late now, though. He looked at the console in the medbay. It had a lot of the same controls as the bridge, but he didn't have a large monitor to use for tracking. Based on the heading, they were a short distance from Key Lorna, which was a very good thing if they could make it there in one piece. The better thing would be to make it through Key Lorna in one piece.
I'm heading back to the bridge. We'll be approaching Key Lorna soon, so settle in and get strapped in. We'll be flipping and pulsing the drive to reduce thrust. I'm not trying to slam on the brakes, but it'll get bumpy either way, he said.
Anki and Malekia both nodded their heads, but stayed silent. Brendel stood in the doorway of the hatch and watched Malekia rub his hands over Dace's chest, the sound of the medical scanner beeping in the background. He made eye contact with Anki for a brief moment. A tear rolled down her cheek, and she looked away.
That tear was because of me, he thought as he turned to walk away.
He made his way forward and jogged his way up the ladder well into the bridge. The large monitor showed little residual debris from the Ceratora, which could mean anything, but he hoped it meant they were through the field and out of sight of the Telran. His hands gripped the control console and he made some quick calculations for approaching Key Lorna. There was a message from the AI on the projected screen. Replicate and her crew are clear of 98% of the debris scattered in the vicinity of the scheduled flight path. It was something he already knew by looking at the monitor, but he tapped the screen clear and began taking control of the ship again.
Ship, I need to reduce thrust to enter a service station at the coordinates on the monitor. The replicate is a little larger than most repair ships, but we need to make this happen. What course of action do you recommend? He asked. Might as well take advantage of the situation if it's available. The screen came to life with a new message. Replicate AI does not advise taking prescribed course of action.
Yeah, that's not really on the table for discussion. We will be entering the service station. I just need to know how to do it without killing us.
Replicate AI has no recommendations with greater than 40% survivability.
Well, shit, Brendel hissed. There comes a time in every man's life when you have to go against the grain. It might not be the right way, but it's the necessary way in order to learn and grow. Brendel had been at this point several times in life. Usually the stakes weren't as high. But the chances of the Telran catching up were too severe to not take the risk. Just because a computer designed to operate a ship within the confines of set parameters couldn't see a way to pull it off, didn't mean Brendel couldn't fly the ship ass-first doing somersaults into Key Lorna if he needed to. Of course, the 40% survivability was grating on him a bit, but they were dead either way if he didn't try. He wiped the screen clear again and reverse-dumped thrust. Somewhere outside the ship, the engine's vectoring shifted and produced all kinds of noise, if it could be heard in vacuum. Instead, he was met with the violent shake of the ship and a loss of gravity as the ship tumbled. Brendel lost his grip on the console and fell aft, or up, or whatever direction was relative as the entire space cartwheeled around him. He kicked off the bulkhead and reached for the console, finding purchase with the fingers of his left hand. He used the reverse thrust to slow the ship down, and waited for the service station to grab them. He had only used a service station like Key Lorna once, and the sensation was akin to what fluid must feel like being sucked through a hose. Orientation changes rapidly. Something similar to gravity causes bodies not strapped down to ride against the outer reaches of the suction like a tornado drawing them up and out. He forgot that the last time he had used a service station, he had been strapped into a bunk and had a suit on to keep the blood from rushing out of his brain. The memory of it came too late, as he was hurled across the bridge and eaten by the darkness creeping through his mind, as he lost consciousness.
Chapter 25. Anki. She found him in a heap on the deck. There was no blood, but that didn't necessarily mean he was alive.
"It's been one hell of a day to be on a ship," she thought as she knelt down to check for his vitals. His pulse was normal, and the cold touch of her hand against his neck apparently startled him. Brendel jarred awake, his eyes wide with fear and confusion.
"What happened?"
he asked as he patted himself down. "Must be searching for injuries," she thought.
"I didn't stab you," she said, fighting back a smile.
"I didn't shoot you either," she added. He looked up at her, the joke suddenly realized as he laughed painfully.
"I know, but the last thing I remember was being thrown into the air and slamming against the bulkhead. I think I might have cracked a rib."
"Do you need to go to the med bay?"
Anki asked. She certainly hoped he was man enough to take a cracked rib. Of course, she had given him a rather severe beating before, and he had taken that with a bit more than his dignity intact. That fact still grated on her nerves, so she pushed the thought away. Brendel rose to his feet and arched his back. He looked around, but for what, she didn't know.
"We were burning hard with an elevated pitch. What happened?"
he asked.
Anki just shrugged.
"I'm not sure.
We felt the shift in pitch and assumed you had done it. Once the thrust leveled out to the gravity on deck, I decided to come see how things were going. That's when I found you, she said. Hmm, was all he had to say to that. Instead, he moved over to the console and read the readout. The autopilot engaged somehow and took the strain off the ship. It's a good thing, too, because all the force being applied to the ship when we entered Key Lorna could have torn us apart. Visions of the Ceratora erupting around her came to mind, but she fought it back. Are we still being pursued? She asked. The question felt heavy in the air around her. Brendel looked on the console and shook his head. I don't think so. I can't imagine the Tel'ran could make it through Key Lorna, anyway. Where are we now? Anki asked. The sound of relief in her voice was noticeable, even to her. He shrugged his shoulders before answering. His voice, with a tinge of guilt, said, We're in a dead sector. There's no life-supporting planetary bodies here. The ones that once existed were destroyed by my people. She held back the temptation to rest her hand on his shoulder. Not because he didn't need comforting, but because she knew he felt responsible in some way, and the likelihood of his involvement scared her more than she wanted to admit. Anki wanted to say something, but her voice was caught in her throat. I know you look at me like I'm a monster, a killer, but that's not who I want to be, he said as he turned to face her. There was a single tear hugging each of his emerald eyes. She could tell it wasn't from physical pain, but something personal, deep beneath his skin. If I could take everything back, I would. I want to make a difference. To protect lives instead of destroying them. I think if nothing else, we can at least agree we're on the same side when it comes to that. She watched him as his eyes lowered, the burden of what they had gone through finally finding a way to release itself in grief. I can agree to that, she said, barely louder than a whisper, when the console chimed with an incoming message. They turned to look at the monitor, Brendel wiping his eyes with the backs of his hands. That's strange. There's a news feed available, he said, shifting his hand across the console to pull up the feed. Anki moved over next to Brendel and watched the console change to a monitor. It was an image of Luthia filling the screen. She recognized the umbilicals sticking through the cloudy atmosphere surrounding the planet. What she didn't recognize was the source of the news feed. What is this? She asked. She couldn't hide the sound of worry in her voice. Brendel scratched his head nervously. That is a video feed from the Tel'ran, the ship that stranded me on the moon where you found me. You see these numbers along the bottom of the feed? That's the ship of origin, and the timestamp indicates it was sent several hours ago. I think jumping through Key Lorna may have affected our place in time. It's an anomaly not unheard of, but I haven't experienced it to this magnitude before. He droned on, spitting out all kinds of information that didn't pertain to the fact that she recognized the image being shown. That's my world, she said, the quivering of her lips making her voice sound weak. I'm sorry, he said as the monitor lit up, showing the destruction of her world before her eyes. Anki screamed, but hardly any sound came from her aching throat. She watched in horror as devastation erupted, setting Luthia ablaze in an inferno of Greshen design. Everything around her seemed to fade away as her heart felt like it was being torn from her chest. It was the death of everything she had ever known. The Greshens found Luthia unprotected. They killed my world,
They killed my father, she thought as she collapsed to the deck. There was nothing left to protect. Comfort was hard to come by on the Replicade. Everywhere you looked, there was someone experiencing pain, either physical or emotionally. The hard truth was four people from different worlds found themselves in an unlikely alliance, regardless of how temporary. This alliance forced them to see each other's moments of weakness. Anki looked at the men in her company. The Greshen. The one with guilt so thick it almost defined who he was. Yet without him, they would have been dead. The Leakin husbands. Daze and Malekia. Two men lost in the dark who put themselves in harm's way to protect strangers. And there she was, an orphan with no world left to protect. She had no tears left to shed as the Replicade drifted in the dark, the ship's silence reflecting their own. Anki broke the silence. If I would have stayed and fought, then maybe I would have made a difference. Brendel looked up from his seat, his knees lifted to his chin and his arms wrapped around his legs, making him look childlike. What he said was nothing like a child, though. There is nothing anyone could have done to stop the Telran. The ship was designed to destroy planets and survive the attacks of a fleet of ships. Your ship, your navy, had no chance against a Greshen enemy. His words sounded stoic, candid, and she knew it was the truth. Luthia had flooded their navy with the most advanced weaponry they could acquire. Yet the only planets to survive Gresha had been the ones who bowed before the enemy. Luthia had never had the intentions of surrender. Their pride had killed them just as surely as the Telran had. Perhaps the government of Luthia had intended that all along. The idea of such a thing made her sick to think about it.
When Gresha destroyed Lakush, we thought our lives were over as well, Daze said, breaking her train of thought. We were lucky to have found the ship, to escape with our lives. But we have experienced guilt for surviving as well. It is not easy to live beyond the existence of your world, but we have found a means to cope with one another.
Anki watched as Malekia grasped his husband's hand, squeezing it gently as a way to assure they were still alive, so long as they had each other. At any other time, it would have felt like gloating, but with them, it seemed perfectly natural.
Perhaps I just rationalized it in order to cope with the severity of my loss, she thought as she rose to her feet.
She didn't know why she stood, because she had no intention of going anywhere, but Anki felt like she had to do something or she might die. Brendel stood next to her. When she looked at him, she could see words trying to form behind his lips, but they stood in silence. Watching, waiting for the other to speak. When he finally spoke, Anki realized she had been holding her breath as she waited.
Will you come with me?
Where? She asked.
I don't know. To talk.
He answered. He shuffled his feet in a nervous way as he waited for her to respond. She had nothing to say. And no motivation to form words to decline his invitation, if it could even be called that. She merely nodded, stood, and followed him from the bridge to the cargo bay, as the numbing pain of emptiness gnawed at her heart. Chapter 26. Brendel. Sometimes avoiding death relatively unscathed brought out the best in people. Other times, it brought out the worst. For Brendel, he hoped his actions on the Bridge of the Replicade were heroic enough to mask the severity and harshness of his words, though he had a feeling his words weren't as loud as drawing his weapon on Malekia had been. The fact that the other man had attacked him wasn't as audacious as the fact Brendel was seconds from firing. He didn't want to kill anyone. In fact, he hoped more than anything that his days of killing were behind him. But in the throes of trying to escape the snares of the Telran, he had been caught up in the moment, flinching from fear and needing something to do with the nervous energy. That moment of terror almost made him pull the trigger, and it had nothing to do with the fact he had been attacked first. Everyone seemed to understand, but he still wasn't ready to forgive himself. For Brendel, it didn't matter that very few people could handle situations at that tempo. To know the enemy would respond and be one step ahead of them. If not for Brendel's effort, everyone on board would be dead, him included. But he took no more solace in that fact. He was more afraid than ever because being so close to death showed him something he hadn't known about himself. That something wasn't tangible, but it felt real enough, at least to his heart. He could only hope to express what he felt in words that had meaning to Anki. She was from another world, and he could see in her eyes how much his presence scared her. Not for what he had done, but for what his people had done to her world. The utter destruction of yet another world, another race, and his was the face that reminded her of that very fact. The cargo bay was the only place of relative privacy. For Brendel, he felt as if his entire world had dissolved while bringing the truth into focus at the same time. It was an awkward feeling, one he couldn't put into words, though he wanted to try. For Anki, he knew there was nothing left to go back to. Her world was destroyed, her people gone save for a few refugees scouring their way across the galaxy and hiding from the tyrannical Greshan Empire. The fact she sat next to one of their kind and didn't slit his throat said just as much about his presence as it did her. Though he couldn't help but wonder if her not killing him just for spite was a display of weakness in its own way. She owed him her life, but Brendel knew he owed her the same. If not for him, then she would not have crash-landed on that lonesome moon. But she would have also been in line of fire of the Telran. Her transport would have been destroyed, and he would have died alone on that rock, without ever having known her. The more he thought about it, the more he realized he had much to be thankful for. He regretted that thankfulness in a small way, because he knew she was hurting, feeling guilty for surviving. He imagined Malekia's words were reverberating in her mind as she struggled to come to terms with her new scope of reality. Brendel wished he could take it back, to rewind the clock and try to change things for the better. But those thoughts were useless. He needed to give her hope in some way, but he couldn't find the words. So they sat there in silence. He had lost count of how many times he wanted to extend his hand to her, to comfort her. He didn't even know where those thoughts were coming from, but he recognized the ache in his heart for her as something more than whatever he imagined she thought of him. Brendel was growing frustrated with himself. He needed to act or to say something. Otherwise, it was pointless for him to have asked her to follow him. He could only imagine what was going through her mind at the moment. He knew what the cause of pain was, but how it manifested itself was anyone's guess. When he finally spoke, it was with the only thing he could think of to say.
"Do you believe in the gods? Or a god?" Brendel asked. Their bodies were close enough to be almost touching. His words a delicate whisper, as if he was trying to keep them secret.
"No," she said flatly. "I don't have much reason to believe, though. If any kind of god exists, why wouldn't they save my people?" Brendel winced at the question, but fought the urge to answer it, not wanting to deviate from the questions burning in his heart.
"What about love?"
The question was only 3 words, but felt much heavier as they fell from his lips.
"What about the concept of forever belonging to someone else?"
Anki sat quietly for a moment, contemplating his words. He could see how uneasiness burned at her as she wrapped her arms around herself, a psychological need for shelter when she felt exposed. Brendel saw a look of contempt on her face, but he didn't know if it was because of the line of questioning or if it was something else. Perhaps it was him.
"I don't know,"
she answered. Her words barely carried across the short distance from her lips to his ears before signs of her defensiveness built up. "Why do you ask me such things?" Her voice was louder now, more accusatory. Their eyes met, the hurt of his and the fragile stare of her own beating back at him for a burden she was obviously carrying beneath the surface. He watched her as her gaze softened, and something like regret was etched upon her face, starting with her eyes and moving to her pouty lips.
"I'm sorry," she said. A collision of relief emanated from both of them, and the tension seemed to die down a bit. "No, I'm sorry," Brendel said.
His words were cut short by an explosion next to the cargo bay door. Anki stood quickly and moved towards the damage in hopes of repairing it.
"I just wanted to tell you I want to be here forever," he said, drawing her attention back to him instead of the danger piercing the hull of the replicate.
Her eyes were wide as she stared at him. She looked like she was holding back words, or tears, or something else. Before she could say anything, the cargo bay door was ripped away, and all the air was sucked out of the room. The change in pressure yanked Anki from her feet and drove her into the dark expanse of vacuum, and Brendel watched in horror as the woman he was beginning to fall for was torn away from him. Without a second thought, Brendel grabbed a tie-down strap and clipped it to his belt. It was designed to hold down crates as a ship accelerated and decelerated through space.
Surely it would hold me and keep me from drifting too far away from the ship.
He was about to execute the dumbest plan in his short life, but he hoped it would pay off. Running in vacuum was like sitting underwater and fighting the currents as they tried to drift you away. Muscular control was negligible and you couldn't breathe. Luckily, there was an EVA floating nearby. He could only hope the thrusters worked and could propel him fast enough to catch Anki. For Brendel, the lack of air evoked a feeling of panic, but he pressed on. He could still see Anki, her black hair floating around her face, exaggerating the expression of a silent scream. She was running out of time. They both were. Death was at the cusp of each second as it ticked past. Brendel leaped into the void, igniting the thruster and feeling the surge pushing him forward to where the woman who could have just as easily killed him when they first met waited with open arms. The drift of falling up and into her arms seemed to take forever, but eventually their oxygen-deprived bodies touched. The tether holding them to the ship, attached to Brendel's belt, ratcheted to a stop as he caught her in time for the auto spool to engage and begin to drag them back inside.